Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com.
Welcome. You have entered the realm of 1111 Talk Radio. Your host is Simran. It's time to discover your own language with the universe. Empower yourself, broaden your mind, open your heart, and discover who you are. Now, here's your host, Simran.
Welcome. It is a joy to be with you today as I'm feeling quite contemplative. I have been since the beginning of March. It is my birthday month, and Pisceans tend to like to swim in all the waters that they find themselves in, and love is one of those places that I continually explore, as well as devotion and ceremony and ritual, all of the things that I feel continually pulsing deep within my bones and my organs and flowing through my blood. And I imagine that you too, regardless of distractions in the world or the busyness that you get caught up in, I imagine from time to time that continuing pulse of what's true does come as a reminder that we often have this sense of the something more that we don't always give ourselves, and that somehow life's sufferings tend to turn us back to. And right now, with so much happening in the world, and so much that feels distracting on the news or within your lives and your families, sometimes it's hard to tap into those places of love. Sometimes it's easy to get hardened by what we see in the world, or simply apathetic because there's just not enough time for everything. Sometimes love's not at the top of our minds. But what about divine love? Does that seem to surround it all? Does that permeate all of the illusion to touch us in moments? Or what depths or perhaps heights do we have to go to touch divine love, to hold it, to keep it, to understand that it walks around all of the time, alongside of us and inside of us? It's unfortunate that our world is in a place where there is so much division and conflict. And I think there are a lot of people that are questioning why we're here and what we're doing, and most of all, where we're going. I think there are a lot of young people that question religion these days. They are turning toward greater spirituality. Perhaps you are too. And I think that's the doorway. I think to know divine love, we have to know ourselves. We have to be willing to immerse in all of the cracks and crevices. We have to be willing to let it all go. And I have a guest today that has released a book called Love's Guest, Reflections of Inspiration and Wonder. It's an annotated selection from the Spiritual Dialogues by St. Catherine of Genoa. And Mark Aronoff is a mystic, a psychotherapist, and an award-winning playwright. After completing his BA in the interpretation of literature at Northwestern University, Mark lived abroad where he wrote for theater and worked as a professional actor, dancer, and choreographer. Mark's drama, The Lantern Bearers, has won several awards, attracting an international audience, and was translated into Italian in 2021. Mark published feature articles with several national publications and has worked as a ghostwriter with authors from around the world. He holds a master's in counseling psychology and currently offers wellness programs, including meditation and contemplative retreats with individuals and organizations across the nation. He writes in the book, "A relationship with God is nurtured through both a formal practice of meditation and prayer, and our informal awareness and intention to allow for a mystical and ultimately spiritual union with God, moment to moment. Humans have an innate capacity to experience and awaken a transcendent experience of God. Our potential to experience the mystical reality of life speaks to the role of divine love in the world today. God's presence in our every breath, calling us to awaken, feel, and see with the eyes of Christ." I'd like to welcome Mark to 1111 Talk Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Simran. My pleasure to be here.
As I moved through Love's Guest and read the many passages that have been translated and some reworded by St. Catherine, there was this palpable feeling of both her pain and her deep love, and that somehow that was a bridge to being able to open up to that divine love. I looked at your background, and especially as a psychotherapist, you probably encountered many individuals that are in deep, deep pain. But not all those encounter divine love. Perhaps some do. What do you think was the distinction that really allowed for her to have that shift and transformation, so much so that even her husband transformed?
It's a wonderful story for Saint, well, for Catherine of Genoa. And this relationship between human suffering, our egoic needs and wants, and tending to, as we must, our corporal life, and our relationship with the divine is apparent in her trajectory. So briefly, she was born into a rather prominence in what would be 15th century Italy, where Catholicism was certainly the reigning religion. And if I can just share this story of her moment where she was quite miserable. She would have been married off at a young age. She wanted to go into a monastery. I believe she would have been in her teens at that age, at that time, and was turned away as too young. Her sister ended up in a monastery, and she ended up married to a spendthrift, cheating, gambling, wealthy man who ended up losing all his money and losing all her money. As the story goes, she was quite unhappy. And if I were to diagnose her, it would be clinical depression. I think there were moments where she could not get out of bed. And she was struggling. She would have gone 10 years in this life, 17 to 27, around that age. And at some point, she visits her sister, who suggests she goes to confession. And so the history is somewhat difficult to nail down specifically, but we know that she had a moment where during her confession at the age of 27, God pierced her heart in such a way as she shifted forever. And whatever suffering, burden, horror of her life that she had known day to day, something shifted whereby, so to speak, she was no longer that identity. And this is the wonderful moment that I just love as a psychologist, is she came home, so to speak, and her husband said, "What happened to you?" And he literally said, in some manner of speech, "I want what you now have. Oh my goodness, I will walk with you. I will follow you. I will renounce my former life. And he went on with her to volunteer during a plague, nonetheless, at the local hospital and never again cheated. They actually adopted his illegitimate daughter. And it's you know, the relationship between suffering and God, you know, in one sense, we're drawn toward wanting to relieve our heart and soul of that burden through God. And this is not necessarily religious, through prayer, through a relationship with something bigger than us. And that is a kind of fertilizer, a kind of catalyst for our growth. And I think that was what happened to Catherine.
That moment of grace, I think, is something that probably everyone has prayed for at some point, to have an end to the suffering that they might be experiencing in their lives. And I think that we all have our sufferings, whatever they are. It's whether or not we're willing to face them. And in going to confession or finding that moment where grace entered, you as a person of the mind and of science, when you consider the moment of grace and how you've created this work that is so deeply spiritual, how do you reconcile those two things? Where's the meeting point? Is it something that shifts in the mind? Is it something that opens in the heart? Is it a moment of surrender? Do you think that helps us all to get to that place where we open more and more to that divine love, or is it part personal will?
I don't think it can be forced, ever. And yet we must point ourselves, point our eyes, and every day make effort. So it's all of that. I once heard a person who was offering me a healing. He said, "Mark, I'd like you to till the garden of your soul." So imagine each of us are a garden. Some of us are filled with more weeds than others. Some of us have been harmed by trauma, abuse in our families of origin. And there's different pathways to, if we're speaking of this, I want to say highest beacon of transformation, that I'm going to use the words union with God, where our identity is no longer solely our egoic and or our story. And we begin to step into something, and it may be utterly unbelievable for a person to say, "Wait a minute, is there another story?" And it's practice. So surrender, meditation is the first doorway. Prayer is a doorway. Perhaps grieving a trauma and doing some work with a therapist is another passage. Acknowledging and recognizing what happened in one's life to bring us to this difficulty. But ultimately, and I heard this, I was listening to someone last night say these words, that each of us, there's a teaching that each of us, he used the words enlightenment, have an enlightened place in our body, mind, our mind, body, our being. We are each holding a container of absolute union, divine love, and enlightenment with God. And or higher power, or whatever word you want to use, because God does not have to be the word. And that place is our true self. How to know that, and day in, day out, moment to moment, how to at least have some relationship with that is surrender at some point, or even just believing these words. So I think it's a combination. It really is. And as a psychologist, I certainly work with the human. I like to say I treat the spiritual nature of human beings. And some people really want to stay in the story. This language we're using here is not for everyone, oddly.
I released my own trilogy, which is a cross-section of the multidimensional human, and it lays out how to maneuver this world, how to meet our cycles and rhythms and every single thing that we would come across. And the third book is around the graces that we must give ourselves. And it is a bit of that surrendering, but it is a self-anointed grace to me that opens us up to mm-hmm. the divine. Mm-hmm. And when we look at the world, there's so much separation. Even if we look at love, there is both separation and external projection. There's mm-hmm. all this external love that exists in the world, whether it's family or partners or friends or celebrities or things that we like to do. There's all of that love, even to the point that we've projected this love for God externally.
Mm.
And it feels to me that that moment that she had grace, it was as if there was no more projection, mm-hmm. that divine love was actually divine union. And you said that something similar to that just now, is that there has to be that connection and recognition of that divine beingness or spark internally for us to even open a crack mm-hmm. towards that divine love.
Yes. Ultimately, I think what you speak of and your words, I believe, are coming from an experience. I mentioned this in my introduction. I'll ask during the intake, I only ask it once, is there a God in your life or is there a higher power? And I get one of three answers generally. Yes, no. Or I might get, what do you mean? Yes, no. Or there's something I don't know what. And then they might add, if only I could have the experience, what would it mean to each of your listeners, of the whoever's listening now, to have the experience, at least taste? So I want to say we start with an intention. The words you spoke are, the book offers, and your books offer a kind of roadmap. And an idea that point toward an experience. And it's that experience that there's no turning back. And that's where, I guess one could always turn back if one wanted, but I feel like for Catherine, there was no turning back. She went on to live her life in a manner and her husband followed. There was no turning back. What if we could experience it? As my kind of, how do we experience the words we're speaking now? And that is reading and practicing. And, you know, we're on the corporal world. We're in it, especially if you're a householder, as they say in Buddhism. If you're, you know, you have a partner and children and or raising a family or dealing with parents who are dying or ill or sick or just dealing with family, period, it's messy. And I just imagine being sometimes, and I'm not there. Like, I have to be honest. I'm not always there. Letting go, surrendering. What does forgiveness mean when a family member really pushes our buttons or a mother or father who may have harmed us in some manner? How do we step out and into the light of God? And can we have a relationship? What are the boundaries? It's a wonderful question, how to live life in this messy world, especially as we see what's unfolding in front of us as humans and contributing to society, and yet hold the grace and experience of a deeper meaning. And sometimes I think to myself, what's being asked of us today is to understand what's behind the unfolding, what is the deeper meaning, how do we hold that grace in our day-to-day life?
I've always been fascinated by Dante's Inferno, and Catherine had two works, the Treatise of Purgatory and the Spiritual Dialogues, of which your book, is Love's Guest, is based on. And when I think about, and I think you even wrote in your book about purgatory, she viewed it, and I have often viewed it as, that's already right here. We have that experience here.
Yes.
Especially if we are living in our story, as you say, or our identity, we can maintain an experience of purgatory. And so there's so much about identity that feels like it's what locks us. in these places of pain and suffering and purgatory.
Yes.
Do you feel like, in reading her works and translating them, do you feel like she transcended identity?
Absolutely. So, to be clear, just so Love's Guest is a section, an excerpt of what I call a divine song, a divine song of love from her spiritual dialogues. I took a section of that book. It was translated into English, and I birthed Love's Guest, and it was a deep, and we may talk about this at some point, mystical experience for me. In my research and calling, so to speak, to birth this book, I read her spiritual dialogue. I read her Treaty on Purgatory and the spiritual dialogues. But there's a wonderful, and this speaks to what you just mentioned, idea that she offers, which is really somewhat unique to the time of her life, that her Treaty on Purgatory fundamentally presents the idea that after death, the soul of a human would go to a place of an intermediary place where there is always the connection to God, to the divine, to divine love. It's never not there, which is this idea we spoke about earlier when we began our conversation, that here on earth, which is a form of purgatory, absolutely. A number of belief systems will follow that line of thinking, that everything here is a test of sorts that will draw you away from your divine knowledge. And yet it remains so and must be so. It is the literally order of the universe that I call it the God cord in the book. That this cord running through our spine, in essence, connects us at every moment with every breath, with every word we speak, with every thought, to the essence of our being at one with God. It's just a messy life that, and we trip and we fall and we get up and. But this idea that she postulates, which I love, is that even in purgatory, here or elsewhere, God is drawing us forth to become that understanding, that way of being in the world. And, you know, I just want to add, and if you'll see in her writing, it's this incredible swept awayness. One might even say she had an edge of mental illness, because there were days where she couldn't get out of bed after her conversion. But she showed up for work every day, running the largest hospital in Genoa, Italy, in the early 1500s during a plague. And she worked in this. So she showed up. Like, it wasn't like, okay, I'm a monk and I'm going to go off and pray, which is not an easy life either necessarily. So that idea of showing up, it just baffles me, and I honor her. I kind of paid homage, but yeah, life is a bit of a dance between navigating purgatory and remembering our true nature. How about it?
We are such an escapist society. We're always looking for the next big fix or something to take us out of where we are. And many times that means creating the fantasy. And I think enlightenment is one of those places where we project a lot of fantasy. And as you were talking, what kept coming to me was, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water, which is what she did in working in those hospitals. It was, I think the distinction is, before enlightenment, it was the story and the identity and being swept up in the purgatory that was her experience. But after enlightenment, it became more about the love that flowed through her. And so when you have the title Love's Guest, talk a little bit about the meaning of that. What are you sharing when you say Love's Guest?
The question you posed earlier, I'm going to come to this, answer this in a second. how do human beings, and I pose this also, how do human beings, how do any of us come to well-being and an identity or a new understanding of who we truly are? In some manner of speaking, Catherine had a conversion whereby God literally pierced her heart, as she calls it. Loves, I at some point when I read her work, my experience, as I was just literally in an altered state for about a week or two. And it was in those few days that I wrote much of the introduction. And at some point I mentioned Catherine. I don't have the exact line in front of me, is love's guest. And it was in this idea that we all need help. And in this case, Christ, or God, or consciousness of Christ, pierced her heart. And the idea that we are all love's guest is to say we can enter into an identity whereby we are no longer what we think we are. What if we're held at every moment of our life by love, a divine love? Now, one a friend of sorts posed the question, at what point do we become love's host and invite others into our room? It's a little different tack. But love's guest is to say, we allow into our life the opportunity to be accepted, to be welcomed, to be held, to be nourished, as if I was a guest in your home, Simran, and you are love, and you offer me everything that soothes my soul.
Oh, love, you accomplish the whole work of our salvation, which we neither know how to do nor are able to do without you. Mm. Oh, love, your name is so sweet that it imparts sweetness to all things. Sweet is the mouth that names you, most of all when the words proceed from a heart full of your liquid sweetness, which makes us benign, meek, gracious, joyous, bountiful, and ready, so far as may be to serve humanity. O love, when by any way you are able to penetrate the heart of humans with your gracious darts, however slight may be your flame, it is powerful enough to make us abandon all things else for you. This love makes every affection and contradiction appear sweet. The God cord running through each of us, a cord of understanding beyond words, ever present and ever wise, connected to the divine. In a sense, all we have to do is remember and trust in this connection to cultivate the experience of God. This is from Mark Aronoff's book, Love's Guest, Reflections of Inspiration and Wonder, an annotated selection from the Spiritual Dialogues by St. Catherine of Genoa. You can find out more at lovesguest.com. That's LoveesGuest.com. I invite you to check out this book and all that Mark is doing in the world. Again, that's lovesguest.com. We'll be right back after these messages.
Do you want more? More joy, more abundance, more power and presence? How would it feel to have more loving relationships, more empowered community, greater fulfillment and life purpose? The 1111 Mastermind community inspires, empowers, guides, and supports transformation. Shift your mind, expand your heart, deepen insights, let go and chart a new course, dream a new dream. The 1111 Mastermind community is an online portal for personal transformation and soulful expansion. Go to courses.1111mag.com. That's courses.1111mag.com. Change begins with you. Let it be simple, convenient, and transformative. The time is now. step through the 1111 gateway. Courses.1111mag.com.
Have you seen 1111? Do you wonder why certain numbers keep showing up in your life? 11, 111, 22, 33, 444. People all over the world are seeing 1111 and learning the language of universal communication. Subscribe to 1111 Magazine today. www.1111mag.com. 1111 Magazine is a bi-monthly print publication that offers a rich multi-sensory experience. As you engage with experts and topics of consciousness, become enlightened, empowered, and energized so you live a passionate and authentic life of conscious choices. 1111 Magazine, a daily staple for lifting the mindset, discovering the heart, and stepping into conscious living. 1111 Magazine. Order now at www.1111mag.com. 1111mag.com. You are listening to 1111 Talk Radio. Simran is an award-winning author, publisher of 1111 Magazine, powerful speaker of wisdom, and a life mentor. Find out more at IamSimran.com. Now, back to 1111 Talk Radio.
Before we get back to Mark Aronoff and his beautiful book, Love's Guest, I want to mention that I've just released Intuitive Living, a beautiful 7-module course on signs, symbols, and synchronicity. You are not on a journey. You are the journey. You are experience experiencing itself. You are not in the world. You are every piece and part of the world speaking back to you about you. You will be amazed at all of the different ways that your world is constantly not only speaking to you, but reflecting you. I invite you to explore my new course. If you'd like to try out the first module for free, it is available. And you can open up to all the ways that your life is talking to you. Everything from your body, car, and home, to your children and pets, to even the global events that we have going on in the world. If you want to know what you truly are, then it's time to discover all that you are. So check that out. It's called Intuitive Living, and you can go to my websites to find that. O Lord, what manner of love is this? What is the love which is ever changing us from good to better, continually bringing us nearer to our end? And yet, as we approach, it more closely plunges us into an ever profounder ignorance of our situation. Humans in this state are kept alive by the rays of love with which God pierces the heart and which return us to heaven in ardent sighs. If we did not find this relief, we would die through the vehemence of this fire. Sometimes it so restrains us that we can neither speak nor sigh, in order that its work may be more quickly done. But it does not hold us long in this condition, because we cannot remain in it and live. O love, the soul that feels you begins even in this world to possess eternal life. But the Lord conceals this work even from its possessor, lest we should spoil it by making it our own. O love, those who feel you understand you not. Those who desire to comprehend you cannot know you. This is from Mark Aronoff's book, Love's Guest, Reflections of Inspiration and Wonder, an annotated selection from the Spiritual Dialogues by St. Catherine of Genoa. Mark Aronoff is a mystic, psychotherapist, and award-winning playwright, and I invite you to check out all of his work by going to lovesguest.com. So you pose a question to yourself within the book, Mark, at the beginning, where you were inspired to ask, what is the meaning of divine love in the world today? So after moving through some of your own mystical experiences and your exploration of Catherine's writings, and even since having published the book, how do you respond to that question? What is the meaning of divine love in the world today?
Well, let me take a moment. Listening to you read Catherine's words and your lovely voice reveals to me the layers of practice, intention, and surrender. The meaning of divine love in the world today is that effervescence and condition of which we are, as you were noting, part of it all times. It's both a consciousness, intention, awareness. Where are you putting, where do we put our mind? And an awakening of sorts. Divine love plays the role of beyond the drama and beyond the story. How do we see ourselves first in relationship to a higher power? And I feel like when you ask this question, what comes to me also is divine love holds the world together. There's a teaching in Kabbalah of the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet known as the Aleph, which is silent. And there's a teaching that in this silence, this nothingness, the world is held together in divine exploration. It's the nothingness that holds us. And when I say nothingness, it's a very special something. That divine love is indeed a condition. It's almost like that place I spoke of earlier, that's our higher self. And it's our, I don't want to say duty, but our invitation to cultivate an awareness of that divine love. It's the juice that holds the world together through thick or thin, war and famine, beyond the illusion, beyond the conditions that appear, beyond the story. It's the grace by which we rest and find our truth. Something like that.
That's beautiful. That's really beautiful. You know, it's almost as if we are fish in water without knowing we're in the water.
Yes.
That we truly don't understand that. And I was already contemplating about the pause, and you brought up Aleph. There is so much in the pausing and in the presence, within the silence or the breeze that runs through the trees. There's so much in the subtle that we miss, that is the mystical and the beautiful, that is the divine, because we live in such a busy world, and we live in a world where there's so much agenda and everyone's trying to be significant and relative and, you know, be noticed and all of these things. And it seems to me that Catherine, that was never her intention to be noticed. Like, it's the silence that we must return to.
Catherine, and sometimes I imagine this, or I dream about this as an artist. I was a dancer, and I've written a few works. Was swept away by the grace of something bigger than herself. Catherine was swept away by the grace of something bigger than her. And I just love this notion. I'll come back to it. We spoke of it earlier, that when her husband saw it, he said, "I want that also. Please, can I follow you?" And that must have been what people saw in Christ. It's that swept away. It's that there's an element of life that is beyond words. And we touch upon it. And I don't want to, you know, I'm just going to rewind for a second. I don't want to minimize the importance of grounding ourselves in a society where we have certain tasks. That book that you might want to write needs willpower and action. That child that is acting out needs guidance and to be seen in a certain way. And how do we speak up for the wrongs of the world if that is your choice to be that person? The world seems truly a dual action movie, dual orientated, in that we have this understanding that we speak of a divine revelation at all times, ever present, ever available. And we hold the responsibility of, saying I'm sorry when we screw up about that, you know, finding love in a partner, perhaps. What does that mean to step in and out of our triggers? Life is messy. And I just, that dance between the messy and the divine is so sacred for me. And I have to say, I'm also figuring it out. Right. Catherine seemed to be swept away, and I admire that. I often, you know, I think I look at great writers and I look at literature and artists, and there's an element, you get good at what you do through both discipline and practice. But with, for her, for when we talk about a higher power in God, I think it was just being. She became that bubbly, effervescent, unconditional love that we all so yearn for. And in the world of Catholicism, which, and I'm not religious, by the way, I'm much more spiritual, she had to be canonized, to become a saint. Something had to happen. And it was, I want to say this, her being herself, ultimately, being herself.
I believe that our divinity comes through our humanity, that part of what we're really here for is to feel that we embodied on this earth, to really know the full gamut of what it means to be human. And that means embracing all of the messiness while aspiring toward the highest aspect of ourselves. And in that humanity are those glistenings of the divine spark, lay that golden God cord. And it feels to me that, at least in my own experience, grief is that fibrillation again, that resuscitation, in a sense. It breaks down everything that was false, everything that was tied or bound or attached. And that the more we allow ourselves to feel, that we disintegrate the identity more and more to the place where we can touch these moments of grace. But grief is something that a lot of people resist because perhaps they feel like if they go there, they'll never recover. So as you're in your work as a psychotherapist and also looking at what Catherine must have experienced in regard to grief, what would you share about holding those sacred tears?
Grief is the dark room with a scary monster in it that we dare not enter, lest we are overwhelmed. In the beginning, it is so. Slowly we come to know that all the armor and protection that we've manifest to keep us away from that monster, that door that hides the horrors of this life, or perhaps even past lives. Let's stay with this one. We come to know that those protections and armor have not served us as ideally, and that we have the ability to grieve slowly but surely that which needs to be spoken and said and recognized. And sometimes we don't actually have the distinct memory of what happened, but the body hides nothing and the tears will be revealed. Grief is also the catalyst that brought Catherine that day to a humble, deep, resonant confession that allowed an opening. So it's this paradox of both wanting to run away and needing sometimes to get through the day. We can't be walking around a hot mess all day. So we do want to be able to suppress, I'm going to use that word, to put it aside, which is different than repress, some of our difficulties and demons to manage our day. But ideally, we have people like you or I or friends or partners or even our higher power that we can shed those tears and allow ourselves to be feeling without understanding, without thinking, without making sense, but that what happened hurt. And grief becomes that doorway to the light and love and potential for redemption.
You have within love's guest, O love, what a sweet companion and faithful guide you are. Neither speech nor thoughts can do justice to your excellence. Mm-hmm. Blessed is the heart possessed and occupied by you. Love makes us just, simple, pure, rich, wise, and contented. And with its sweetness, it lessens every grief. This divine love, or even simply love, that individuals aspire to, it seems as if before we go out and project that and put that out into the world, there must be an incubation time where we're willing to receive and allow that for ourselves, where there's a worthiness to even believe that we are capable of holding that, of allowing that, of being loved in that way. And that means reaching out for help. That means asking for help. Talk about how we ask for the unseen in the midst of times where we really can't see anything.
Well, you touch upon a vibrant truth that all the ideals and all the books and all the workshops that we read are like roadmaps that point us. And the ground in which we stand is ultimately the garden that we're tilling. And I want to say day by day, beginning with intention, beginning with awareness that I'm hurting, we start to ask for help. It often is coming to know ourselves, what are our patterns. I firmly believe that others can point us toward a relationship with ourself that drops some of the armor. Someone asked me the question once, how do you armor up? When do you armor up? Why do you armor up? When do you put on your armor? And you pose that question, am I worthy of receiving, giving love? How do I draw? And it's a process. I think this is also a Buddhist paradigm that from our suffering is the first noble truth that we're able to come out. If we're not aware, if we're not hurting, we're just bopping along, having a good old time. What is our self-awareness? When we begin to ask and to feel I would like something different. Something needs to change. And I am worthy of that change. Miracles start to occur. I do believe there is a place for the miraculous in life. And maybe that's simply coming to know that you are worthy of love, that you are able to adjust certain patterns if needed. It's a process. My work as a psychologist is rooted in what I call somatic and body-centered work as well, as insight and cognitive work. Dance between conversation like this in some manner, but we're doing something different, Simran. We're almost touching the divine and the sacred as a way through words of being in the world. And it's that touching that I invite everyone to cultivate through prayer, meditation, and ultimately a personal experience with the divine. And we keep coming back. A meditation really is moment to moment starting over. And that idea of the willingness to start over each second, to remember, wait, maybe I don't know everything. I don't have all the answers.
And in that meditation, is it supportive to hold that idea of the God cord in the spine, to see it, to know it?
I am. I practice daily. Meditation has been the biggest doorway for me to the mystical experience of the divine, whereby light and bliss and revelation seem to enter me. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of meditations. I have one in the book called The Love Meditation. I actually just made a recording for somebody. I grew up with, I shouldn't say grew up, but I practice a form of Zen of doing nothing and allowing that in that nothingness, a good feeling bubbles up. There are healers who can touch us through energy work, which opens our meditation. The God cord is the foundation of all meditation in that if we're willing to get out of our own way, allow light and love. And there are techniques. It may be a particular breathing technique. I've been practicing a particular breathing technique the last 6 months or so, and I've been meditating for about 30 years, if not longer, more like 40, I guess. but the last 6 months, I shifted, and a feeling of light and love and bliss envelops me through this meditation. There's a book called The Book of Secrets, and basically the idea is to find a meditation that works for you. I practice different meditations, as I mentioned. I've been practicing Kriya Yoga of late, and some of the teachings of that practice. Each of us have a meditation for our unique position in life. The God cord for me is the foundation of all in that. It's that ever-present, ever-connected line and or connection, yeah, to God, to the divine, to a higher power. And even just surrendering to that, doing nothing, is a great meditation. So I guess to answer your question, yes. I call that the quantum relaxation. I actually have a meditation that I call the quantum or QR meditation, which is doing nothing, being present. And in that nothingness, allowing the divine to bubble up. And it always does.
Oh, love, you restore us to a true and perfect liberty and make us masters of ourselves. We wish nothing but what God wishes and find all things else a grave impediment. Oh, love, I find no words to express your joyous sway, your strong and assured freedom, your sweet and gentle goodness. But all that I could express would be unequal to what you would desire to say. I seek everywhere for loving words appropriate to that love. and find them nowhere. For love and its effects are infinite, and my tongue is not only finite, but very feeble, and is always dissatisfied and confused by its powerlessness to say what it desires. This is from Mark Aronoff's book, Love's Guest, Reflections of Inspiration and Wonder, an annotated selection from the Spiritual Dialogues by St. Catherine of Genoa. Christian mystic Mark Aronoff invites you to consider divine love through the insightful writings of St. Catherine of Genoa. It's a beautifully illustrated book of classic Christian literature describing the Italian mystic's spiritual transformation, and it includes a reflection workbook to encourage a deepening of love and understanding in your own life. Freshly edited and revised for the modern reader, St. Catherine speaks of love as spirit, God, and human existence in a voice simultaneously profound and simple. Go ahead and get your copy and check him out at lovesguest.com. Thank you, Mark, for being on 1111 Talk Radio. Until next week, I am Simran, in love, of love, with love, and as love. Be well.
Thank you for opening your mind to a new reality, your heart to greater compassion, and your experience of aliveness with 1111 Talk Radio.
Calling all authors. Have you been considering an audiobook? Well, look no further. Come take advantage of DreamVision 7 Radio Network's unique in-house audiobook production, which includes benefits and bonuses from our radio station. Let our knowledgeable staff guide you to create the audiobook you've always dreamed of without breaking the bank. Check out our full one-stop service from A to Z, including the ACX process. Schedule a free consultation by calling 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to DreamVision7Radio.com.
This is DreamVision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.